We welcome right now to the show Bernie Kosar. And Bernie, let's get started, first of all, with a very close friend of both of ours. And you guys have a tremendous tie with the University of Miami and went head-to-head in the National Football League. Jim Kelly, former Buffalo Bill, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, diagnosed with cancer of the upper jaw. He's in for a fight, but I know Jim very well, you know, if there's any good news here, the good news is it's Jim Kelly with that spirit, that fight that he has in him, and you know the kind of guy he is, Bert.
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, God bless him and his family, and our prayers, my prayers, you know, go out to Jim. It was, when we started hearing about it about a week ago, you know, first you're in denial. You don't think it's going to happen. And something like that, really, I think, affects a lot of us. I mean, me personally, you know, going to University of Miami purposely to follow him, to learn from him like I did. And then we've been friends, you know, for 35 years almost, you know, and it's unbelievable to be thinking he's in this spot. You know, we're getting all in our early 50s, and, you know, myself with, you know, the infections the stuff without the teeth and all that in there.
You can relate to what he was. I know this started with having teeth removed and all that on Jim's part. So, you know, as you and I were talking about this before we went on the air, you related to a lot of
Well, yeah, that teeth removed on purpose and then teeth removed during games because we cracked or broke our jaws so much. And back then, you know, with the hits to the head being allowed, you know, a lot of us don't have back teeth. And they've cracked our jaw. I mean, that's probably a lot of my concussions and a lot of the cracked jaws. Right. Probably over, you know, 10 or 15 of this crack in the jaw. And I know Jim, as tough as he was, you know, he was one of the guys I admired watching stand in there and taking that shot in the face.
Definitely.
To make a throw, to make a play. It's interesting / why I think so many people respect him because of his toughness.
Right.
But taking shots like that, now seeing, you know, decades later, the ramifications of it, I just hope the younger people, the younger players really appreciate, you know, guys like him and everything he's done. And again, you know, I know you're close with him, too. We love him to death.
We love we do, and we'll just, again, pray for the best. He has surgery coming up on Friday.
Oh, and can I say one other thing,
course,
too? And to show you what a great guy he is.
Yes.
And I don't like to compliment him too much because we joke with each other a lot, but today's not the environment to joke. This situation's happening. He's having – he had neck surgery, back surgery. Now he's having the jaw
surgery.
On Friday for cancer in his jaw. And he's doing his tournament for the 27th year today.
Yes.
It's awesome that, you know, he has that commitment.
It's incredible. And I think it might be one of the longest running of its kind.
Longest running and just, you know, a lot of people may not going through what he's going through, may not have done what he's doing this weekend in terms of the
of what he was going through. And they had exactly he was revealing the first real public reveal of all this came during a pairings party Sunday night. And interestingly enough, two very good friends of mine who played on that Buffalo Bills team with Jim, Fred Smirlis and Jim Richard. Jim Richard, who is from Medina, drove up on motorcycles and were passing through Cleveland. So knowing that I was here, they stopped by, we hung out, we commiserated certainly about Jim, but talked about you too, because these were competitors of your time. I mean, it's very, you know, you say this all the time on this show. I don't want to go back to when I played or I remember when, but it's fun conversation to think back to some of those classic rivalries and matchups. And I'll never forget that playoff game, which for the Browns was a victory. And when I was covering the Bills, it was a defining moment of the start of this whole K-gun no-huddle offense that would take them to four Super Bowls. But that playoff game that was in Cleveland, and Clay Matthews makes the interception to end it all at the end. But just the back and forth of you two guys, I can't remember being more entertained at a football game.
Well, thanks. You know, fortunately we won, and that was one of the times we had 2 weeks to prepare because we had the bye.
Right.
And I really needed it because Buffalo was just better than us back then. And that was before they did that was the last time they lost to an AFC team for the next 4 years. They were just talented and better than us. But we had 2 weeks, and to kind of scheme things up and kind of mess up their coverages and their looks was fun. But, you know, because me and Jim are so close, people think, well, because you're friends, maybe it's you take it easier or not. When you're friends, at least in our crew of guys,
right,
you'd fight to the death to beat your friend. So it was something that, you know, I put a lot of time into. You know, he puts a lot of time into just trying to have bragging rights when we're together.
And Freddie Smerlis, the nut that he is, he was the very funny defensive tackle, nose tackle on that team, said, in talking about you, he said, you know, the ball with Bernie, that sidearm delivery would come out. He goes, and as a defensive lineman, he goes, you almost never had to look up to see the ball. He said it would kind of go under your armpit.
Well, Fred's so big, I did throw some under his arm and stuff, you know.
Definitely. Hey, let's talk about, and we're here with Bernie Kosar, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Let's talk about this being the final week of really off-season workouts altogether. It's going to be mini camp starting tomorrow, running through Thursday. To break it down to some of the various phases of importance, Bernie, it seems to me that the fact that there is going to be this long break between the final workout on Thursday and when this team resumes with training camp at the end of July, a lot of stuff has to be digested on both sides of the ball. I wonder from your standpoint, you know, where you see the most critical area of this team to sort of absorb what they've been taught through this offseason and retain it for that period.
Well, that's a great point. You know, with younger guys, and the devil works with idle hands and idle time. And it's a lot of time between early June and training camp coming up in, you know, 6.5-7 weeks. So it is imperative, and we were talking about it on the show last week, of the sophistication within the defensive schemes, everyone says, I went from 4-3 to a 3-4, but it even goes beyond that, and not just the new terminology, the aggressiveness of, again, I say it repetitively, but the Coach Horton's, the disciple of Dick LeBeau, which we watch a lot of over the last few years with him in Pittsburgh, understanding the knowledge and getting it down as best possible, and then the vertical passing game, we really haven't had that here in Cleveland. Maybe since Chud was here the last time.
Right.
And it's gotten better. Well, yeah, physically you want to be able to make plays, but now it's imperative, just like you said, to get as much of your knowledge base down pat and understanding of what you're doing so that, one, you learn it, you think about it over the next 7 weeks, even though you're off, retain it, and then be able to pick up where you left off here at the end of mini camp, not having to regress back to at training camp, having to learn stuff that was probably put in at the beginning of OTAs. So
right.
To get ahead of the game, to really catch up with some of the other teams, these guys, the coaches are going to do a great job of coaching it. But the young guys, it's really imperative that they understand that what they're learning now is something that they just got to live it. Even the next 7 weeks of being off, they have to live it, retain it, think about it, and visualize what they're going to be doing. So when we start training camp, they really are ready to go. Yeah, they'll probably be ready to go physically, but mentally to understand this stuff and to be able to be more reactionary in training camp as opposed to what they're doing now, which is thinking through their thinking and then trying to make plays.
I would think it would be motivation enough as a paid professional to take it upon yourself to do exactly what you're talking about. But I would add that under the current circumstances where there are new people making decisions about the fate of a lot of these people who are, let's say, not rookies. I'm talking about the incumbents who were brought here by other people, that it would be even more a greater sense of urgency to want to do exactly that, because your chances of making this team and convincing people who still are figuring out what you're all about, right? The evaluators who still aren't 100% sure about what you're all about as a player and want to see how you handle things, how you do retain things, because that gap is a big one between June and July. And Bernie, it really basically means I know people should get away and relax and be away from football for a while and decompress, but what you're suggesting or what you're talking about means taking some of this the so-called downtime and getting your nose in a book.
Well, let me just give you five on that since
all
I'm
right.
in studio. I don't believe in downtime for the team. This
right.
is football. Your average career is 3 years. a little more than 3 years. That means if you're, and somebody always wants to take your position. And if it isn't important to you, if you don't live it and die it, if it's not part of your DNA and your core fiber of really liking, if you need at age 24 to get away and rest, you're probably in the wrong profession. So I couldn't agree with you more that just because it's professional football, you should, and it's your job, you should pay attention to it. But if that's not enough, you hit it right on the head. This is a new front office. It's a new coaching staff. It's a new set of scouts and stuff. And, hey, we picked sixth in the draft again last year. So not everybody is dispensable, yeah. And everybody has an opportunity. So looking at it like there's competition, there's new people, and just professional pride. I mean, to keep continuing to pick as high as we've been picking does, yeah, it makes the offseason fun and the draft fun, but these guys need to know. And if they don't know, I'm going to give them some concussions, whap them upside the head, because they got to get how important and blessed they are, and that this is not something you, like a light switch. You flip it on when you show up for mini camp, right. You flip it on for training camp. The light's always got to be on, always thinking about this.
It would seem to me that this would be a pretty important few days for Brandon Whedon to reinforce his case. He's been the guy taking the first team reps through these offseason workouts, through the OTAs. And now to see what he'll do over these next few days would seem to be interesting because, hey, it's installed now. I mean, they have the offense. He knows or supposed to know what it is that Norv Turner and Rob Chudzinski are doing in the way of scheming. That's all in. And now it's about really digesting that and executing that. So he can't really have too many of those false moments out there where he's not sure, even though it's a new scheme. And I would think mistakes, there's still that margin of error, Bernie. But I think these are 3 days to show, hey, I've got this down.
Well, I couldn't agree with you anymore. And if we could add just to that, I know Chud and Norv, and they're not taking the next 7 weeks off. And if you're a player, you so want them to spend 7 weeks thinking about how good you did these last 3 days. There is no way on God's earth that I'd want to be able to screw up, take a half a day off, miss up half a practice, and have that thought in the coaches' heads over the next 7 weeks. It's not reinforcement. It's not trying to make a good impression. It's showing that you deserve to be here. Your teammates see it. Your coaches, they're going to be studying this stuff. They're going to be thinking about it. And there's no way for the next 45 days I'd want my coaches knowing that, God, I messed up a little bit in the last set of practices that are really the most defining part of the whole offseason program.
Yeah. And the other offensive spot I look at is tight end. Jordan Cameron had a little bit of an issue with a groin muscle that kept him out temporarily, but the good news was seeing him back in action at the end of the OTAs last week. And I think there's a guy, this is an important time to surge. You know, I saw him around the building today, and you could see the look in his eye. I mean, I think he knows what this means to him. Not that everything's make or break in these next 3 days, but just to set the tone for what he needs to show this preseason.
Absolutely. Look, he's been a basketball player most of his life. He's just learning the football stuff, coming from the West Coast. So this is, you know, he's into his third and fourth year. That's the time frame of you're either going to become a player and be a difference maker, or you're going to be just a dude, or you're going to get cut. And he's at that crossroads. So it's imperative, again, just for him. You know, he has had some issues with the health to show, and again, to have the coaches thinking that, okay, he's healthy, he came back, it was just a little something, and he is a playmaker. He is out there making plays. Because the way the game has changed, too, for guys like him, it is somewhat realistic because they're not allowed to wipe guys out anymore during these games. So him showing that he's got the system down, that he's getting down the field, that he aggressively runs his routes, that he aggressively goes up and gets the ball, that his time is now to show if he's going to be a difference maker in the league. Yeah. And to keep the coaches, again, and the scouts, and everybody focused on something else so they're not focused on replacing you.
And the competitive situation at safety will also be one that we'll watch closely. I think Tayshawn Gibson has made a strong statement for himself to perhaps be, at the very least, the bridge kind of guy that this team would like to have in there until a Jamora Slaughter, the sixth-round draft pick, is ready to go. And corner's another spot. Leon McFadden, I think, making a strong case right off the bat to be the starter opposite Joe Hayden. So those are two spots in the secondary that are going to be something you watch over these next few.
Well, especially at the corner position. Again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. The corner position is something where it's almost like game-type tempo because you're allowed to be physical in these OTAs at the corner position, and you could see the ball skills, the zone abilities to read and anticipate and read quarterback eyes and read route combinations. And then there's a mental aspect to it with the new system that's significantly more confusing / complex than they've had in the past. So, again, talking about reacting, knowing and reacting as opposed to thinking and then trying to do something makes a big difference for the young athletes.
Bernie, great. Appreciate it. And we will catch up again next week.
Sounds good.
He is Bernie Kosar, the one and only, and he joins us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.